Product Breakfast Club.
Hey, everybody. It's Jake Knapp. I am your host today. This is a little bit of a different episode of the Product Breakfast Club podcast. Normally, I'm joined by my co-host, Jonathan Courtney from Berlin, but today it is just me. And this is one of those special episodes where we do an interview. I'm interviewing somebody who I really admire. Sarah Cooper is going to be on the show today. And Sarah is a writer and comedian. She's really hilarious. She's got a book out called 100 Tricks to Appear Smart in Meetings. And just a hilarious presence on Twitter. She writes amazing blog posts. You can find her all over the internet. But the thing that is especially interesting to me is how Sarah went from actually being a designer. And I first met Sarah when she worked at Google. She was the design manager of Google Docs and a fantastic designer, left that career to go into comedy. Today, we're just going to talk a little bit with her about what that transition was like and what she sort of learned along the way. I think you'll find it very interesting. I am greatly looking forward to chatting with her. So let's do the interview. Sarah, thank you for coming on to the Product Breakfast Club podcast. For those of you listening at home, we've just had a major problem with the recording, but we're trying again here. And it's really a testament to what a nice person Sarah is. Sarah.
I applaud you for sticking to it. Because honestly, a lot of people, they get stuck on the technology part of it and they just never get past it because it's just so confusing and difficult. Audio is something I don't understand at all. So
it's funny because you can't see it. As a person who spent so much of my career working on designing things, I can't see what's going on. And I don't know. I feel like a person just exposed to technology for the first time.
Yeah.
Actually, design is an interesting topic because you once were a designer. And I suppose once a designer, always a designer. But you're a comedian now. You and I first met at Google. But around the time that we first met, you wrote this post called How to Appear Smart in Meetings. It totally blew up and it has millions of views, which is something that I can't even imagine how that feels. It seems really cool. You went from being at Google, being a design manager on the Google Docs team, excellent designer who was just like well known around the company. And then now you're a comedian. Could you tell me like a little bit about what happened, that story?
Yeah, I was working at Google as a designer and then I was manager for the Google Docs team. And I really enjoyed it. But how I got to Google was a little bit not the normal way of how people get to be a designer at Google. I was pursuing acting, comedy, and writing, and I kind of went broke. Going to Google was kind of a fallback career.
Wow. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but just like at this era when you joined, almost everybody, designers at Google, had a computer science degree. Mm. Right? Was that your experience when you joined? Like a lot of the folks I worked with did. I didn't.
I think you joined a lot earlier than I did. So I had a digital design degree and a lot of people had these more specific design degrees. And I think that's more the norm now, right? People are having degrees in design instead of just having degrees in computer science.
But to say the least, it's unusual to have it be your fallback from a comedy career. That was not the norm. And it's interesting because pretty soon, at least from my perspective, from the distance, you're managing the Google Docs team, which is like a big deal in terms of products, like that big thing. As a comedy acting person, did you feel like there was some sort of natural bridge from those skills into the workplace?
You know, sadly, I think my interest in comedy and my passion for entertainment really helped me at Google in two different ways. One of the ways was I was a joy to be in meetings with because I was always making jokes and I was just trying to make things fun. And as important as it is to get the product out and to launch something and to be productive, it's also really important to enjoy what you're doing and to look forward to your day. And so that was kind of my focus. And I think also I didn't put as much pressure on myself at Google as I think a lot of designers do and a lot of people in general do. I did see it as something that I was sort of doing to get myself out of debt and to maybe hopefully go back to writing and comedy at some point. And I think a lot of times when people put a lot of pressure on something or it's the most important thing and it has to work out, like that's a recipe for it not working out sometimes. At least that's kind of been the result for me. And I think that's true for how I left Google too, because I was just kind of writing and doing comedy on the side, not really expecting anything. And that's when something happened for me. So I think having this background in comedy definitely helped me get ahead and do well at Google.
So talk about the notebook. You found this notebook.
Yeah. I was at Yahoo and I was sitting in a meeting and a product manager, of course, got up and drew a Venn diagram that made no sense and had nothing to do with what we were talking about. And I thought that people would make fun of him or tell him that that was irrelevant and he should sit down. But instead, people started helping him draw the Venn diagram and telling him to make this circle bigger, this circle smaller, change the labels. And I was really impressed because he handed the marker to someone else and he sat back down at his laptop and to go back to doing whatever he was doing. And I wrote down in my notebook how to look smart in a meeting, draw a Venn diagram.
What year was the Venn diagram? When did that happen?
That happened in 2007.
2007. Okay. So you're at Yahoo at that time. Okay. Sorry. So continue.
Yeah. And so then 7 years later, after leaving Yahoo, becoming an actress, going broke, and then joining Google, I came across the notebook again and decided to create a blog post out of it. Now, I really wish I had created a blog post out of it in 2007, but I just didn't think anything of it. So I created a blog post called 10 Tricks to Appear Smart in Meetings and put it online. I put it on medium.com and it just blew up. It had a few hundred thousand views within a few days and a million views within a week, and it just really took off.
It's so cool. Actually, okay, side tangent. You just mentioned, like, I wish I had written that post sooner. Do you think it would have been as good? Do you think the timing would have been as good for the post to spread, like all these things? Like, do you think it actually would have been better to write it sooner?
I have no idea. I mean, that's a good question. Sometimes things just happen at the right time. So who knows if as many people would have seen it or shared it back in 2007 as they did in 2014, I guess it was. So yeah, I don't know. But I think it was just more like, looking back, I had so many ideas. You know, I have so many notebooks with all these random ideas. And for me, it was kind of a moment of, wow, there's a lot of things that I think of and I create that I don't take seriously enough to share and I don't take seriously enough to do something with. And I think that was kind of a revelation for me in that, you know, there's probably lots of missed opportunities every day that we all have that we never really pursue. And so that was something that I was like, okay, I'm going to take my ideas more seriously.
Well, okay. So that is a huge reason why I wanted to have you on the podcast, which, as anyone who's listened to this podcast before knows, is just a selfish endeavor for me and for my co-host Jonathan to talk about stuff we want to talk about anyway. I sought you out when I left Google because you had left Google and to pursue this career full time. You went back to comedy, back to writing. And from my perspective, being at Google, I was like, that is like a sign that that can be done. Like you left, you were writing all these amazing posts and, you know, you signed a book deal, you had books coming out and you had converted your career from really successful design manager, product person, well-known within Google to what seemed to me a whole new thing. And, you know, what I realized as we talked more was this is something that had been going on for a long time. This is not something, an overnight, you know, thing that you discovered. But how did you, what was that transition like? Like deciding to leave Google, leaving, what happened?
The thing that I love is that there is a chain of Googlers helping other Googlers leave Google. Because what you say about me, like inspiring you, there was another Googler who inspired me and there was another Googler who inspired her. So I feel like leaving Google is such a big deal. It's such a scary thing to say, you know what? I work at the best company in the entire world, but that's not good enough. You know, to say that is really hard. People think you're crazy. My fiance thought I was crazy. My parents thought I was crazy. My parents always think I'm crazy though anyway. But I had a friend who had left Google, who was a designer and to do her own thing. And I wrote her an email, which is so funny because I wrote this email saying, I have a friend who's thinking about leaving. What advice would you give her? Because I wasn't even ready to tell her that I was the one thinking about leaving.
Oh, wow. You literally did asking for a friend.
Yes. And she knew immediately that it was not asking for a friend. But she gave me a lot of great advice. And I think looking back, knowing that you can always go back to Google. Google's always there. If you enjoy working there and you enjoy working with the people there, a lot of people leave and come back. And so the risk of leaving isn't as big as you think it is. The risk of not going for something that you're really passionate about and doing something with your life that you really are excited about, that's the bigger risk. So making that decision became a little bit easier knowing that I could always go back.
Did you feel that you had to leave? Was it hard? Was it a hard decision by the time you got to that point and had those conversations?
It was very hard. I feel like it was hard. When I told my manager, that was difficult. A few weeks later, I had this panic attack. I woke up in the middle of the night, like, I'm doing the wrong thing. I should stay. I should maybe just switch teams. You know, even after I left, I would wake up and I'd be like, what am I doing? You know, because when you have a job and you have a schedule and you have things that you are doing every day and you feel productive, then all of a sudden you have none of that and you're home alone trying to create something, not even sure if you're doing the right thing, not even sure like what's the end game. Everyone's always like, well, what's your end game here? I have no idea, you know? And so not having any answers to those questions was really difficult. And it was a year, I want to say a year and a half before I was really like, okay, I'm not going to go back to Google. I can do this, you know? But that first year I was like, okay, I can always go back. I can always go back.
Apart from that feeling of uncertainty or that feeling of like, you know, wanting that as a safety net and reminding yourself of it, were there positive feelings that came along with departing?
Well, I think when I left and my team created a video for me and everyone sort of shared memories that they had about working with me. And every single memory was about something that I did that made them laugh. That made me realize, okay, maybe I'm doing the right thing because I'm supposed to be a design leader, but nobody's talking about how I inspired anything about design or whatever. Even though I was passionate about design, it's really kind of a moment in your life where you're like, yeah, I'm passionate about this thing, but am I a trailblazer in it? Is this the thing that's really going to differentiate me from other people? And it really wasn't. What differentiated me was my sense of humor and my ability to make observations and my ability to create things that people identified with. Like, that's the thing that really separated me from other people. And it's okay that I was a good designer, but that wasn't the thing. You know, that's just not the thing that I think I was really meant to do with 100% of my time.
That is something that I feel like is a question that a lot of people struggle with. I mean, certainly I did for a long time trying to figure out what was my deal. And I don't know if this is particular to design or if, you know, I imagine it's going on in all lines of work, but that I felt like in my own career, like, I like this stuff, I enjoy it, but it's not the superpower, like, or it's not what makes me the most special. And trying to figure out what that was, whether there was anything that is challenging. So you leave. You're at home now. Mm-hmm. You're trying to do stuff. And from the outside, it appears that a ton is happening. You're writing books. You're writing posts. You've got the Cooper Review website. It's like tons of posts on it, tons of traffic. Your tweets, you are a prolific tweeter.
I'm a prolific tweeter. They're going to put that on my headstone.
Yeah. And they're good. Actually, I'm kind of angry because I am always like rewarded for checking Twitter because you have almost always a new tweet and they make me laugh. You getting a lot done. How did you design your day to go from I'm working at home now, I don't have the structure of an office, to actually like getting stuff done?
Well, I went through stages. The first stage was I'm going to get so much done. I'm going to be so productive now that I don't have a job. I'm going to write a new post every single day. I'm going to create a new video every week. I'm going to create a web series. You know, I thought I was going to just do so much and that was impossible. And it created this situation where I could not do as much as I thought I could. And I was very disappointed in myself. And then I felt like a failure because I kind of set myself up for doing a bunch of things that just weren't possible for me to do. And so then I went to, you know what, I'm going to get one thing done per day, just one thing. And it doesn't have to be a blog post. It just has to be one thing. And then it went to one great thing per week. And now I think I really look at my months more as like, okay, what is this thing that I want to accomplish for this month or this week? And so over the years, I've now given myself more of a break to give myself the time to create something that I really am proud of versus just making a bunch of things just for the sake of making things, which is, I think, what I was doing in the beginning just to make myself feel like I was being productive. And I think that people think, oh, I'll leave my job and then I'll have so much time and I'll create so much more. But for me, I created and came up with a lot of ideas while I was sitting in meetings, supposed to be paying attention to meetings. That was a lot of time where my mind was sort of idle and I was creating things and coming up with ideas. And so I didn't even have that space anymore. And so I had to create that space. And a lot of my best posts are not things that I forced. They're things that I'd been thinking about for months and months and months. And so I just had to sort of learn who I was in terms of productivity. And I think everybody sort of has their own, you know, who are you? Like, are you a person that just is just like bang, 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 bang? Like my husband just gets so much done. He wakes up at 4 a.m. and he's just so productive and he just gets so much done. And I'm just not that kind of person. I need time and I need space to think and I need to take a walk and I need to do other things in order to create that thing that I want to create.
Do you see, if you look back at a time when you were at Google, times before that, when you were writing, acting, doing comedy, you know, you have these sort of different chapters of your career. Do you see like commonalities now that you're, you know, like, oh, when I did my best work, for me, it always was when I had that downtime, that time away, or has this been totally fresh?
I think the commonality was pressure. And like, I've done my best work when I had the least amount of pressure and when I put the least amount of pressure on myself and I just let myself do something that was fun and that I enjoyed doing. And so that was true for the first time I tried stand up and I just went to an open mic and I just drank 6 beers and I just got on stage and just told a story about my dating life. And that was just supposed to be me trying to become a better actress and trying to be more comfortable in my own skin. But then it turned out I really liked stand up and I really liked writing my own lines and directing myself and performing on stage. And so it's so difficult because we all want control over the things that we do and the outcomes, but a lot of things that happen that are great, just you had no idea they were going to happen and you had no control over the outcome. And thank God, because the thing that happens is not something that you would have even thought to have chosen for yourself.
Well, one thing that you've talked about that I see as a theme again and again is this almost this idea of like play. Now, somebody mentioned this to me recently when I was feeling stuck and they're like, try going into play modes. My friend Stefan, he was like, just give yourself some time when you're just playing with it. It doesn't matter if it's no good. And it's almost sounds like there's this pattern of not only with what has worked well for you with writing, with acting, but even at Google, like the things that people enjoyed the most, the things that started to really stick when you were working on products were moments when you're kind of at play and enjoying yourself in a meeting. And that is uncommon. It actually is something that I feel like we don't have enough of, but it could be super powerful.
Yeah, definitely. Actually, I was thinking, is there any idea of play in the sprints that you guys do? Like,
no.
There's not. Yeah, I mean, I think that might be something interesting to explore, like in terms of doing something that literally has nothing to do with what you're supposed to be getting out of it, but it's just supposed to take your mind off of it so that you can create a space for coming up with something that's really novel.
Yeah, I probably looked at those meetings at Google from the opposite perspective and was like, when I started to realize it wasn't always working, you know, that all of the things that were going on that made me feel dumb weren't always working. My angle was kind of like, well, how do we make it effective? And how do we sort of, I tried to want to solve those problems. It's a very boring way to approach it, actually.
But that's kind of the Google way, is just like, you know, what's the algorithm?
Yeah,
what's the equation that's going to get us to the thing that we need to get to? But the thing is, a lot of times there is no algorithm, you know, there's no specific thing that you can do.
Well, speaking of that, I want to hear your take on brainstorming. Just what do you think? Group brainstorms. You've been in them, I know.
That's how we met. I think the first time was a sprint that we were doing for Google Docs in Mountain View. And I can't say that I really remember any of the ideas that we came up with. Yeah, I think one of the ideas I came up with was something about Google Drive being this place that remembers everything about you, is your memory, I don't know, lockbox or something like that, which looking back is like, that's really scary. Now it's like, oh my God, there's so many privacy implications with that. And maybe people don't want all their memories stored. I looked up a hotel on Google the other day. I did a Google search for the hotel. And on the side, there was an ad for the hotel. And then underneath the ad, it said, you stayed here 10 years ago.
Whoa. Wow.
It knew from a reservation confirmation in my email that I stayed at that hotel 10 years ago. So that was a moment where I was like, wow, Google knows more about me than I know about myself. And that is really freaky.
That seems creepy.
Yeah, I felt a little bit sad because I was like, oh, wow, I stayed here 10 years ago. And then I looked it up and I was like, okay, then it reminded me. And then I was like, okay, I can remember it now. But I didn't remember it when I did that. And it's kind of like Amazon. I looked up a book a few years ago and I was like so excited about buying this book. And it said, you purchased this book back in 2006. And I was like, oh my God, history is just repeating itself. But like the internet is making me like realize that I've already done this. Oh, maybe man. That's actually a good thing. That sounds like a Black Mirror episode, actually.
You know, with Amazon, it's often easier to just order it again than to find it, I think. So that was okay. Okay, this is kind of like a sound like a weird sort of new agey kind of question, but you are now in the business of you are the product. Like Sarah Cooper is the product. I thought of this because I was looking at your website. You know, I wanted to make sure I was completely up to date on what you're up to for this conversation. And I looked at your website and you have like a really well-designed website. Anyone who looks at it will think that it is. And you're also very busy. I was noticing how many shows you're doing in addition to all of the stuff we talked about that you're producing. But it struck me that Sarah Cooper is now the product. Like you're a product designer and you have to sort of create this product of yourself. And I wondered if there is any actual connection to the things that you thought about when you were designing Google Docs and the things that you think about now when you're doing this new career.
Yeah, I think there's some overlap with Google Docs. And you know how a lot of the identity crisis with Google Docs was how are we different than Microsoft Word? And, you know, how are we different but the same? Because people know Microsoft Word and we want to take advantage of those things, but we also want to create something that's new and better. And so I think there was a bit of an identity crisis there, and I think it gets better all the time. You start to see like how it's becoming more and more its own thing. And I think for me, creating a brand for myself is a lot about looking at people who I admire and trying to figure out how I can emulate the things that I like about them, but then at the same time, figure out how am I different and make those differences really clear and not pigeonhole myself, but at the same time, be known for something. So there's a lot of things that I have to deal with in terms of how I present myself and who I am. Like, am I a person that just does tech comedy or do I do all kinds of comedy? Is the Cooper Review just for office humor? Is there other humor there? Like, a lot of people want consistency and build up an audience that expects a certain thing. And so there's part of that is like, you want to give them what they want and what they expect. But then at the same time, how can you make it different and unique? So I think that there's a lot of similarities there.
Who is your Microsoft Word now? Or which people?
I really love Trevor Noah right now. So Trevor Noah is the host of The Daily Show. And he has started a series called Between the Scenes, whereas he just talks to the audience between the scripted things that they do on the show. And so I have no idea if he's just coming up with his stuff on the fly or if it seems like he's just coming up with the stuff on the fly. And so he's talking about the news of the day just talking from the hip and just kind of making everyone laugh and just making all of these interesting connections between things. And so for me right now, I just really, really admire him. I also think that it's really cool how he's taken his background as someone who lived through apartheid in South Africa and what that was like for him, written a memoir and taken all of that stuff into his comedy and into his perspective. And so for me, the thing that I love about stand-up and comedy is that I can tell my story. And no matter how old I get, because we're all getting older and getting older sucks, it doesn't matter. You know, I can be 60 and then I'll be 60-year-old Sarah Cooper telling my story as a 60-year-old, and that's okay. And so I love that I can create work that just changes and grows as I change and grow. And so that's my ultimate dream for my career is that it's something I can always do.
It sounds like when you're looking at someone and you're thinking about what you can learn or what can be inspired by, it's like figuring out what the essence of what that person's doing is, how to sort of make it true for yourself or remind yourself that that's important.
Yeah, definitely. But then also figure out how you're different than that person. And I think that's what happens in the corporate world a lot too, is that people start to mimic each other and start to imitate the people at the top because they figure they are at the top. So that's how I get to the top, is I act like them. And that's kind of what 100 Tricks to Appear Smart in Meetings is about. It's because all of these things are things that people do, and then they just start to imitate each other. And there's some good things about imitation. You know, babies learn emotions by imitating their parents. But at a certain point, you have to stop imitating, and you have to start doing things from the heart, from your own passion and for what you really care about. And so I think part of the thing that I enjoy about hearing about my book is that people say to me, oh, I realize I do this. I have no idea why I do this. I'm going to stop doing this, because it's just me sort of being like robotic and not really present in the moment. And so, you know, that's kind of my hope, is that, you know, people will stop imitating so much, because you can't really like imitate passion. That really needs to come from somewhere.
Yeah, the thing that's so powerful about your stuff, about The Office, and I love this about 100 Tricks to Appear Smart in Meetings, is the book, by the way. Everyone should have many copies throughout. You should have your own personal copy, and you should have them in every meeting room, I think, as a reminder, because it's true. You laugh at those things, you see them, and you're like, oh my God, I've totally seen those. It's hilarious. But it also can't help but read your work and say, oh my God, like, I've been doing that. We've all been doing those things. And if you say, I'm not going to do those things anymore, what comes through afterwards is so much more honest and genuine. Well, you know, Sarah, I want to let you get on with your day. That is a great place to end it.
Awesome. Thank you for this. This was fun.
Yeah. Thanks so much for taking the time. And where can people find you online? Where should they look?
So my personal website is sarahcpr.com, S-A-R-A-H-C-P-R. And that's not because I know CPR. It's just a shortening of Cooper. And then my blog is thecooperreview.com.
Do you know CPR?
I do not.
Okay. And so don't go looking for help. If you are choking, you should find someone else. And also on Twitter. I feel like people who are on Twitter should really follow you.
Yes. I'm at SarahCPR on Twitter.
Okay.
I'm always on there.
Yeah. Sarah CPR is the key. All right. Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you.